Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. My name is Patrick Gilbert. I'm the COO at Adventure Media Group. This is a podcast where we talk about digital advertising, business consulting, and career growth. Joining me today is Ryan Urban, the CEO and founder of Wunderkind, a performance marketing engine that allows digital businesses to deliver one-to-one messages at scale. Ryan has a really exciting background. This is a podcast that we've been looking to get on the books for a while now. I'm really excited to have this conversation. Ryan, give me kind of the elevator pitch about Wunderkind and who you are, and let's kick things off.
Yeah, what's going on, Patrick? Thanks for having me on the show. So, and we do got a great show today. So Wunderkind, we have two kinds of customers. We have brands, and some of the best brands in the world. And so we represent brands. We make sure brands have a good experience, and we represent people, so consumers. All of our marketing technology solutions are designed for what are things that people enjoy receiving. So even things like emails, what kind of emails do you like receiving? And everything we currently do is one-to-one. So everything we take what brands do, that's like kind of one-to-all, one-to-many, and we make that one-to-one. But we really think in terms of like a people's consumer perspective, what are things people like? So essentially, we just connect brands and people. That's what we do. We do that scale.
Awesome. So you consider yourself to be in the marketing technology space?
We are.
Okay, awesome. Yep. And you've been in business for around 9 years now. I know your background was you were involved in a lot of different tech startups. You were working at Bonobos for a while.
Yeah, that was great.
So it's been 9 years, right?
Been 9 years, and we're approaching about 800 people. We're calling in from the World Trade Center right now, 474, gorgeous place. So, yeah,
incredible. Congratulations on that. So talk to me about as a CEO of a company that's grown pretty significantly over the last couple of years, 800 some people. You have offices in a couple different countries or a couple different cities, a few different countries. What do you really spend the most of your time on? What's been top of mind for you lately?
Yeah, lately it's what gives me meaning is really the value of the products. It's not like the revenue number. It's of the business. It's not how much revenue is coming in. It's the two biggest things are like the value of our product. And for us, like we're a marketing technology company, so I break that into five parts. And I think every business should like really think about what are the values of products. And there's both internal and external products. So for us, we have five things that we really look at. One is we want our products to, sometimes software drives time savings. Like our software drives growth. So our software and everyone listening to this likes to drive growth. I've also never met a founder or CEO or head of marketing that doesn't have a growth number in their head. So growth is important. So revenue is a big value driver. So it has to do that. For us, like revenue is not by sending more emails or doing discounts or running sales. Like that's not a great brand experience. It's not what a brand wants to do. Of course, you're gonna have to do that sometimes, and those things can be effective. But people should buy from you because the products are good. I'm not this jobber speaker right here. I actually probably paid twice the price because there was a shortage of it. It works really well. So like this MacBook Pro works really well. I'm not buying because it's on sale, right? The sales is pretty good, right? So it's we want to create a good brand experience. So the second thing is brand experience. So how brands communicate, how they represent themselves. At minimum, with a brand, you want to make sure that your technology and your team flow nicely with it. But also you want to have be the best version of brands. So you want to be able to elevate a brand and you want to bring a brand forward. So that's revenue is one, brand experience is two. Third, and I think every single company should have this, is operating velocity. Operating velocity, like we want our clients, our brands, to be able to not only, I like the word velocity because it means speed and direction. It's like combination, and it's a cool word to say. It's like velocity. Sounds like an Hadouken and like fast. It's like, it's nice, like velocity, right? So, and it has city in it, it's cool. So operating velocity is something I think should be a macro value drive for everybody. So there's value, there's like, so that's just, combination of like moving faster and doing more shit or being more efficient. So the fourth for us is cost savings. I think cost savings should be something that every company should have as well. And right now we're talking about external for clients right now, and then I'll get to ones internally. It turns out they're the same thing. And since we're an enterprise company, compliance and security is very important. So we want to make sure that we help our clients get in compliance. Could be things like Google policies, Facebook policies, but also things like GDPR, getting them in compliance with ADA. And those things are nice to do anyway. You want to be forward thinking and those kind of things, and just have your stuff work for everything and fit nicely into the ecosystem. So and those five value drivers: revenue, brand experience, operating velocity, cost savings, and compliance security. We all have those are internal products of ours as well. So even your external products, you have internal products and services. And so That's why you want to drive more revenue lines internally. You could be improving our internal brand experience. You could be having internal operating velocity, internal cost savings, and internal security compliance too. So that's, we have five categories, and it's 10 macro value drivers, internal, external. So those are the things that I spend a lot of time on, and I make sure that any executives that could be at a VP level or above really have these macro initiatives, whether it's intro department, whether they're working on things that are, it could be a opening up a new vertical like travel and hospitality, like a new revenue line for us, or taking a tech, our text product and taking that to the UK, taking that to that office, it could be new revenue lines, or it's how do we improve the overall text revenue we're driving for clients? What is, how do we improve that in a way that's very, very brand forward, that improves brand experience. So, and if you're, if you do a great brand experience and if you're improving customer experience, then people should have a better shopping experience, which means they're spending more, they're converting more, and they're coming back more often. So sometimes people think of a conversion funnel as a one-time event. It's not a funnel. Funnels are like, no, it's like, there's a, it's like a sphere. It's a, it's like a shopping sphere. So you, and I don't use terms like lifetime value because it's not like lifetime. It's not lifetime. It's a, it's like you're, it should be evergreen. It should be, you should have your customers indefinitely, and they should refer other people and keep providing more value to customers. So to answer your question, I like to focus on the value and what drives those value and people and process behind that. Yeah, and constantly improve that. And I'd say the second thing is just developing leaders, empowering leaders. And I think that's a, that'll be a whole nother topic we talk about. That's the most important thing any company is, building leadership team and empowering them. And I'll talk to the, there's a big difference between delegating and empowering, and I'll get to that.
Yeah, definitely. So let's circle back to that. But I want to talk about the actual Wunderkind product real quick. So you have a lot of different areas here that you've mentioned, and you're operating in an industry that changes very quickly. So I think that it's, you never want to do yourself a disservice by pigeonholing your product and saying, you know, we're just this one thing, because tomorrow that one thing could be radically different. But how would you describe essentially the bread and butter product that Wunderkind is? What do you really serve?
Yeah, I would never worry about like companies pigeonholing yourself or going into an industry that's saturated. Anything that's good, like you just want to, you want your product to be the best. It's like you want to have a superior product and service. Like then you're not worried about pricing. Like we, when our original product, which was called BadText, it's, we had overlays that we were charging some people $100,000 a month for, while people had free ones, right? And we had people happily paying that because it was worth it. So it's anything you do, just do it exceptional. Do it on a Wunderkind level, which is, it's a kind of being extraordinary. There's three level, there's three classification organizations. This is my opinion. There's level one organizations that solve problems, that solve for things. Those get to a certain scale. Level two organizations maximize things that are good. It's like take something good, like say Google. There was a lot of search engines. Actually, search was pretty saturated when Google came to the market. They built a better search engine. Their advertising a while is trash, but eventually they made the first advertising product online that really worked well at scale. So they iterated that, but they did make a better search engine. They didn't invent the search engine. And level three organizations, which is the highest level, it's you take something from zero to one. That's where Amazon, they were a level two organization for a while when they made eBay better. So they cataloged the whole internet into single listings, and it was a smooth process of buying, shipping, payment. So they it took them 8 years to catch up to eBay, and then they kicked their butt because they made eBay better. And then where the Amazon went from like 200 billion to a 1.5 trillion was it went to zero to one, where they came out with cloud computing, where they started selling cloud computing. That's zero to one thing. So that's a level three organization. So I think kind of look at what your organization is. Is your organization, was it a bad idea that solved the problem? You're going to cap at a certain point. Problem solving organizations are limited. Are you a level two organization where you take something that existed and you make it much better, or your level three organization go from zero to one? So I think you could do, we were a level two organization for a long time, and then we're level three. So to answer your question on innovation in industry, if you're level three, you are the industry. You are pushing it forward. If you're level two and you're good at it, it doesn't matter what the industry does. Who cares? You're the best. Like you're the best product and service. You provide the most value. And I think you should be charging a premium. I like the race to the top, being the most expensive, charging a fair price for things. It's like everything's based on the value you're driving. So price and absence of values could be really expensive. So we're at a premium. So if you're level two, if you're solving problems, then you do got to worry about the industry. So I'd say if you're level two, level three, then really, really focus on the value and being premium there.
Very cool. I like that. I like that breakdown. So describe to me Wunderkind. Sell me the product. I'm an e-commerce brand, or I'm a retail brand. I have an e-commerce presence. Cool. What can Wunderkind software do for me?
Yeah, it's we sell revenue. So it's we literally sell people revenue. So it's we sell revenue by improved experience. Generally, we have done 3 cohorts of customers. We have a lot that have online revenue, and the brands are pretty big. We have a lot that have online revenue more than that 50 million to a few hundred million range. We're doing more in the billion plus range, and we have a ton that do it between 4 million and that 30 million. So it's more like mid-market enterprise strategic that we look at. We tend to work with brands that have some scale because it's, you got to get your stuff figured out. You got to get your systems in place. You want your commerce platform being in place. You want your product mix in place, the customers you have. And we have a lot of services that are part of getting the product on board. And so we wait till a brand gets a certain size because service is really important in working with people. So once the brand gets a certain size, we do work with them. And what we do is we take people's kind of personalization efforts, we scale it. So almost the personalization efforts that we kind of see that are effective are like an email, and maybe people are doing say cart and browse emails, but typically personalization makes up about 1 or 2% of a brand's revenue before we work with them. And after us, it's going to be more in that 10 to 20% range. So we're able to increase brand's revenue at scale by 10 to 20%, usually within 6 months. So, and we do it by scaling their personalization of it. So some it's just our technology. We have a great identity network that we can recognize. We can help you recognize customers. The huge challenge that the major retailers have is it's 50 to 75% of their traffic is their customers. And once you get some scale, most of your traffic is your customers. It's not like you're paying Google $1 billion a month. But at a certain point, you have scale. Most of your purchases come from your customers, and that should be the case. Hopefully that's the case. That's how you really scale a business, that it's mostly repeat stuff and most of your traffic is repeat stuff. So, but the challenge is no one on a commerce site, retail, no one logs in, no one creates accounts. There's no reason to create accounts. You have your Chrome Autofill settings, your guest checkout, you have your different payment options like Shopify Pay, PayPal. You just don't create accounts. You don't need to. And if you do, you're not logging in when you're browsing. So you have, for the brands we work with, it's most of their traffic is their customers. They can't recognize them. So we help them. We build technology network to help them recognize their customers. And if someone's not their customer, we have great permissioning technology, which we're amazing at getting an email and text opt-ins. That should be something you earn. So we're really good at that. And then so we help you scale. We use out those things to scale the personalization solution you have. And basically, besides cart emails, we brought to market every single personalization solution you see for messaging. That's something that came out of us.
Let's describe personalization.
Personalization is something that's it's one-to-one. It's something for you. Right? That's something for you. As simple as the simple concept of you went to a website. When you leave the website, you got an email with the product you looked at. That's personalization. So we came out with it. So it's something simple that. Then it's oh, cool. What if that item, this sweater you looked at, this Gucci sweater, the sweater, what if it wasn't in stock in your size or the option that you wanted? And all of a sudden, a month later, it was. We let you know. So we got tied to inventory. What if you're looking at it and now it's gonna sell out and it's only 4 left? You should know. What if 2 months later the price drops? Probably want to know. So it's what if new products come in that are similar to ones you bought? So you can you might get an email from a brand that's here's the 2,000 new arrivals in these categories and kitchenware. For us, it's here's the 6 new arrivals for you. It's everything is for you. So it's what do people enjoy receiving? What's fun? What's valuable? So based on the things that they've looked at, purchased. So what are the things that people want to receive? And how do you do that in brand profile?
So I think a lot of people think of personalization as and especially when you talk about email, it's okay, yeah, we've all received emails that just say our name. Hey, Patrick, looks you could really use a new credit card. No, I don't need enough of this. Also, this isn't personal. I know that this came from a robot. What you're describing is, hey, we're tracking actual data on individual experiences. And we've all seen cart abandonment emails, but you're saying this is kind of that on steroids where it's...
Yep. Also, there's challenge of cart abandonment emails. People only sending it to 2% of their audience because no one's logging in. So we scale that. And how do you make card emails much better? It's sometimes based on the things you looked at, you might want to recommend some other stuff in the cart. How do cart and product emails work together? You need to be very sophisticated. You want to send some emails more. If someone in high intent on certain items in the cart, you want to send them individual emails with more information about those items. Could be social proof where those things are featured, could be reviews, could be about the design. You should be giving those people more information about those things automatically. So it's not just here's the thing you looked at. It's giving them relevant stuff to those things. So
Is Wunderkind making any sort of predictive analytics to say what might be the driving factors that'll increase the sale? So you mentioned social proof right now. it would there be a chance that I might get a message that that's tailored to include a message of social proof, whereas somebody else might be more inclined for a discount? Is that something that's factored in? Is that leveled into personalization at all?
That's more about more brand to brand than intra brand. But yeah, of course. But there's some brands like Gucci's not doing discounts. Not about that. When you're doing discount, it's best to break up prospects and customers. So we treat commerce like B2B. It's you have your future, your prospects, the people how far you are, and your customers. You definitely want to get as many of your prospects signed as possible. Create a KPI of what percentage of people are signing for email and text, or how many permissions you're getting per thousand. You got to create KPIs, track that really well, and improve those things. You want to have the right incentive, definitely. But incentives should be for prospects. You want to discount to customers as little as possible. You want to train them to really enjoy the products you have, not buying because of discount. It's a get the right price there. Do that. So, and constantly be moving your products up, like getting better and better quality stuff. So, I break out the best way to cohort stuff is prospects for customers. That's a common one. You should always do that. And that would be how many parts of the series you might get. Like I might have an offer versus but not have an offer, or a different kind of offer. So that's just be done every single time.
Okay. Interesting. So let's take a step toward growing a business and how you've been able to achieve that. 9 years, which is a lot of time, but as a business owner, that's a lifetime. I'm sure that there's probably a lot that you could talk about and many books you could write on the concept. I went back and I found an interview that you had done a few years back where you were talking about growing team members individually and what sort of culture you instill to help build leaders. And you had said something to the extent of that if a team member doesn't feel underwater for at least 1 week out of the month, then they're not moving fast enough. So you sort of lean into this concept of overwhelming people. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because I think I really can appreciate that, because I do agree with you completely. Can you expand that at all? Would you still
agree? I learned a lot from my dog. So I learned a really good lesson from my dog recently. If you make sure your dog's dish is full, they don't beg you for food. It's like my dog doesn't ask for food. Like no one in my company asks to be challenged. And it's like, I don't want to stuff them where you can't walk down the street, right? It's the right amount of food, but I make sure people's dish is full. And a dish is full is a two-way street. Dish is full is from the company top-down perspective that you have initiative on initiatives. Like you set some important priorities for the company, and you make sure the company is putting together these key initiatives, and you have the leaders say, hey, we're going to be doing these initiatives. That's operating velocity. Operating velocity is super important. That's you have to have that. And operating velocity, you could take a company like Microsoft in the past that had no vision, no taste, and they could just iterate their way just with velocity and execution to the biggest company in the world. Like it wasn't about their heart, vision, taste. They just literally iterated and executed just with pure operating velocity. Operating velocity is important and special. So you have to, the two-way street is top down, the company, the organization from the top says, hey, here's initiatives. Here are things that are important to company. Here's how we're measuring success in these things. Like for us, like we had something called Destination 95, where we want our annual, not our monthly, our annual renewal rate to be 95%, which is from a gross perspective. So that's the top number being 100. Like, and our other numbers are our net, which is, it's actually over 100%. It's really cool. So we wanted to get there, which is almost impossible. That'd be like the highest, one of the highest of all time. That's what I want to do. It's like, okay, no one should leave us. It should be like, hey, if a company literally website goes dark, or if we don't think they're treating their employees well or something, it should be only those cases where we choose or they're not. And that's about the 5%. It's like where we choose or the website doesn't exist anymore. So anyone besides that should be with us for life. Like we should keep going with them. So we have that initiative. It's like, okay, well, then you have a metric, which is, it was 95%, but say it was 88%. And it's like, okay, then we set up 17 different initiatives and who are the people that own that? We like the RACI process, which is like you have someone responsible who owns the whole thing at the end. You have people accountable, owning certain parts of it. You have people who are consulted with certain parts. You have people informed. So that seems to work really well. You got to figure out the right people can own things end to end. But it's like in those 17 initiatives, boom. It's like then you don't do the initiatives to take and do the initiatives. You do the initiatives to get the result. You get to 88%. You get You do it to get the result. So the company, you got to set up what's important, the how to measure success, the different key initiatives, and then bottom up, the two-way street is like, I expect every individual company to be making proposals, be working on key initiatives. We have five macro value drivers: revenue, brand experience, operating velocity, cost savings, and compliance. Those are internal, external products and services. You should be contributing towards those things. Like, you should, in addition to your regular job, which you have your core performance, you have some KPIs there, you're also working on those things. So, and I expect people to make proposals for that in addition to company level. So that's how you move. That's how, and then for leaders, like, the dish should be full. And now I'll get into the delegate versus empower. So, like, we're the difference between like CEOs that built like $10 million revenue companies and $100 million revenue companies. $10 million revenue is pretty good, right? Like, yeah, how many people you know like just building $10 million revenue companies, eight-figure companies, pretty good. But there's a lot of CEOs who could do that and cap out. So those CEOs that do that are generally very good at delegating their low leverage activities. So they see what they're spending their time on, and time is like the scarcest, most valuable resource. And they're very good at saying, okay, what's my low leverage stuff? And how do I delegate that stuff so I can take up more high leverage stuff? And then eventually they're working on high leverage stuff. High leverage stuff for them is things that they're good at, sometimes uniquely qualified for. They're really good at, and they're a joy. They're good at and they enjoy. And obviously they could get some scale because they got to that. They can do a business that's $10 million. And those people, like, who do that and continue, those CEOs who continue just to really exclusively work on the stuff that they're good at and enjoy, they stop scaling. The CEOs who spend their time working on the highest value things that they enjoy, they're good at, they ultimately fail. So that's, and because they delegate, they don't empower. Now, empowering is very different. Empowering starts with, you take the things that you're the best at, you enjoy, and you're doing with scale, and you empower others to do that. If you do not do that, if you do not take your best things that you're good at, and it, empowering others doesn't mean like one person. You need to develop people, you need to hire people. It might be a 1 month, a 1 year process, 2 year process. You need to take the things you're best at and you enjoy doing, and you need to have other people under you do those better and more scale than you, or you will cap out, and it will cap out 100% of the time.
So what is that for you? What are you the best at that you enjoy doing the most?
Becoming Wunderkind upbranding. Like, I was pretty unique and qualified to do that. I had a team, and that was something I thought we earned the right to, we were this company, and I didn't own that externally, or I didn't own that, was a big deal. So that I wasn't the top of that racing model, and I had a team under me owning that, and I was just accountable for different parts of it. That's really important. That was something that was very special to me. And I gave up the reins because it was really important I power others to build a system, build a hive. So internally, I wanted to own, the part I was accountable for was with leadership and getting them excited, energized, being bought in. So it's as me as CEO, there should be very few things I own end-to-end, very few things. There should be parts I'm accountable for. I should own very few things end-to-end. So like, even in early sales, I mean, I'm really good. It was pretty good at sales. It's like, I can't, my close rate was 35-40%, where the other closes were 10-15%. And if I'm, the big things, if I'm on the call, it's like, okay, I'm going to close 2 or 3 times more of those deals. And if I didn't have other people do those things, like, we'd be a few million-dollar company instead of a company that will be approaching 100 times.
I think that's great advice. I don't know if I've ever heard that before, but that's definitely, I completely agree with that concept of find the thing that you're the best at, that you're most interested in, but then spend all of your time and energy teaching other people how to do it better. I think that's fantastic.
With more skill.
What do you think, as far, you know, being the CEO, you don't necessarily have a boss that's directing you around. So a lot of CEOs or people at the, you know, leadership in a company of any size will often spend their time being very reactive. How do you prevent that? And how do you essentially figure out how to best spend your time?
I do nothing reactive. Reactive, I had many years ago, I had a concept for myself personally called Reactive Zero. It was a big deal for me where I got down to zero reactive things. I don't do anything reactive. Everything on my schedule is something I put on there that's important to me. I know the biggest things I want to do. I spend all my time doing that. I spend no time.
So how do you decide on what's the most important things that you need to be prioritizing?
Also, like, it's how other people respect your time. Like, I'm actually one of the few people in the company not on Slack. I don't take text messages. Then my most personal channel is personal email. So if someone can email me, it's very personal. And about everything through WhatsApp, I'm really effective at doing voice memos and video memos, so I could route a lot of stuff that way. I have different times, different days a week, different times a day where I only do certain kind of things. So even like right now, it's a Tuesday afternoon. It's I'm going to be doing mostly external stuff here. Actually, just had a great call with the mayor of Miami. It was really sick. It's awesome. So we want to do something special on there. But I don't context switch. I don't when you're reactive, your context switching is really tough. If you get any notifications if you're beyond an associate individual contributor, if you get any notification at all, that's an issue. You shouldn't be getting any notifications. These are the things you check at different times. Like I'll certainly check my WhatsApp or my email sometimes, but it's on my time.
Do you think that's frustrating for anyone that works directly underneath you, or do you think that's something that they just need to agree upon or learn to deal with?
I'm more responsive than I'm very organized, so I'm very responsive. So not like when you're reactive to things, you're actually super inefficient with your time. So I can like anyone, like I don't have unanswered for WhatsApps or emails. My inbox, like Kevin's doer here. Like Kevin, how's my inbox? Like
it's really in good shape, and he really is super responsive, which is great. I'm only 3 weeks into the job.
And how often do you see me check? If you're with me, you'll never see me. Almost never see my phone, never checking stuff. I do things in time block, so I'll have specific times that I'll do stuff. I also teach people, like, hey, you're not gonna ask me questions over email. You can I empower the people under me to ask them, or if you're gonna ask me, it's gonna be directly on WhatsApp as a voice memo, or I can respond different times. I train my friends not to message me during work hours. So from like 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Thursday, I try not to take external stuff outside of Wunderkind. That's my Wunderkind time. When I'm outside of Wunderkind time, I don't think of a Wunderkind. Like I'm able to do a lot of things because I'm really focused, effective my time. So I started talking about this recently. I track my deep sleep. If you track regular sleep, you track how long it takes to go to bed, how much time you spend in bed, how long it takes to go to bed, how much you're sleeping, your REM sleep, your deep sleep, and then how long it takes to get up. Like when I get up, I'm up, boom, instant. I go to sleep instantly. I train myself to do that. It wasn't like natural. But also I got down to like 5.5 hours of sleep time because I kept so much deep sleep. So I could now sleep like 5.5 or 6 hours instead of 7.5 or 8. And actually 5.5 is really good because once you get past 8, your body can start swelling up. It's like you don't want your body to be that rest that much. And like 4 hours is not enough. So, but if you get deep sleep, you can do that 5.5 hour time and be fresh. But you want to be fresh when you wake up. So for me, I look at like deep work too. I look at like how much time you spend at work, how long does it take to get going, how much like REM work and deep work you're doing. So deep work is like, you're like, boom, you're really productive. If you do 10 hours deep work a week, you're very productive. If you could do 30 or 40, that's super incredible. And deep work could be just really important conversation that energizes people, that like, that they're motivating all the people around them. So energy index is really important. Important to me, what kind of vibe that I'm creating, how I'm influencing the people around me to kind of do the regular jobs and do macro value drivers, and also like have that tree of like leaders who build leaders who build leaders. So great leadership development is not only you're developing the next person, you're teaching them how to develop others and others and others. It's got to be a leadership factor or pushing buttons and boom, leader comes out, boom, leader comes out. And it's not even the next person up. You're building a system. You're building a system with more and more and more leaders. So, and developing is the best thing. It's like you got to sometimes be thinking about 4 or 5 year tracks for people. And if you're thinking about them that way, like that's just the way you're talking to them, and they're going to be with you. Like it's beyond loyalty. It's like you're really developing someone. You really get meaning when they're successful. Then that makes part really important.
The sleep thing is really interesting. I was actually thinking about this morning because I don't really necessarily have like a very rigid morning routine. It's very much like sometimes I'm in the office super early. Sometimes I'm working from home for a while and then I come into the office. Sometimes I'm taking calls. Sometimes I'm not. And I was trying to figure out like, what is it, you know, how do I get more energy in the morning? Is it sleep? Is it different exercise schedules? Should I be eating differently? Should I be taking coffee at a different regimen? And I realized this morning, like I just get energized when I'm able to just get out of bed and start working. As ridiculous as that sounds, like I think that's a very important thing.
That sounds obvious. That's like, it's that I don't do snooze. Like I stopped doing that. That's like, if you wake up when you wake up, if you're up, just stay up and sit up. Like I did a little Wim Hof breathing. It's like unnecessary to do something like that, but like, just like you set up deep breath. I'm not going to my phone right away. I never look at my phone before I go to sleep. It's my time. And if it's in the morning, I'm doing something on my phone. It's not like WhatsApp stuff. It's like, hey, I may have some YouTube content that I want to see. I want to, there may be some stuff in the market that like, it's important to me. I'm researching, oh, what's happening this week? What's new? But it's all the content that puts me in a good mood. So like any YouTube content I look at will usually be like, other people like I'm inspired by, could be any Elon Musk content, but anything that's like, going to give me some good energy for the day. And that's like a good way to start my day. But it's like, get into your routine as quick as possible. I say, wake up at the same time and invest in your bed, have a good bed, have a great mattress, great sheets, great pillows. Like in the amount of time you should iterate, invest on your bed, having blackout. Like I don't like the blackout thing, but like having your light control, having your temperature control, put $5,000 into your bedroom. Like where you sleep in the bed, be a back sleeper.
My litmus test now that I've started to think about is my phone's Face ID does not work when my lights are out. And I think that's how you know that you're doing good for like light prevention and sleep. Because other people are like, oh yeah, of course it always works because the light shining in, whatever. And then they're the ones complaining about that they don't get good night's sleep.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
You talked about developing leaders. I'm sure you have a sizable leadership team, all different types of personality traits. You're a high energy guy. There's a certain way that you've been able to establish yourself. But not every single person in your organization is going to be the same cookie cutter type of leader.
You want to have good energy.
How do you coach that?
Yeah, it's not like high energy. You can't have a room full of high energy people. That'd be no good. You want people to have good energy, great energy. And a lot of people have great energy you need a lot of introverts having great energy because words are important. And the people, when they say words, they're very powerful. Like that's really important. So I look for leaders. Number one trait is heart. So heart is you really enjoy when other people are succeeding. And that could be other leaders and people in your team. It's not only your team. So some leaders have heart, some leaders are just like for their team. It's gotta be, you gotta be rooting for the other leaders too. So it's like, that's a big part of heart. So there's a lot of people who like root for them and their team who like don't index super high on heart. Like heart's like gotta be off the charts. And then execution, like that operating velocity, like those things are really important. For me and my leaders, I like respect, and it's a bit of a New York thing. Respect starts with yourself. Your respect for yourself, that means you definitely don't take yourself too seriously. You're not offended. You don't take things personally. You're never like complaining, blaming things. That's time respect for yourself, and you have respect for others. You have respect for other people's privacy. You don't talk shit. Like it's like you communicate. Like respect is a super important thing that I want leaders to have. And part of it's like you can joke around when you don't take yourself too seriously and respect for people. It's like you can. And you can then things can be much looser. So respect's really important, and heart, that's important. That operating velocity. So that's what I look for here. For leadership.
Amazing. I totally agree with that. So what is next for Wunderkind? What is the direction that you guys are moving in? What are you thinking about trying to work on now for the long term?
It's ecosystem scale. So there's two, like we have those two products and services. So externally, it's we're their full suite. We're able to increase brand by revenue by 15-20%. It's a lot. It's cool. I want to get that to 30-40%. I want to really have that major impact. And that's like Google, Facebook level impact. So we're really getting there. And I like that we could partner and provide a great brand experience. Where I really want our technology to go to stores. I want to like go beyond Minority Report. We call it Majority Report. You walk in the store, you as soon as you pick up something, you get all the information about it. You get all different images. You're getting reviews. You're getting stuff about the designer. Like you can hear the sound. Like if I pick the speaker from the store, I can't hear the sound. Like it should be. If I pick up the seltzer thing, it should tell me more about the ingredients, reviews, what it tastes like, what is natural flavors. Like it's every time I pick up something in the store, I should have so much info about it in the store. And also, I should have that information saved. I shouldn't need an app. It's just I'm literally on the website for the store, and in a little tray. Like I have anything I look at the store. I have anything I browse online. When I walk in a store, I should have my whole purchase history. I should have a GPS. Like going in store discovery is overwhelming. It's like going to a Target store, a Home Depot, or even like Costco. You got to literally walk aisles. It's like I should have a thing of like, here's the things I'm interested in, and here's other things, and this is where I go to go check these things out. And when I go check them out, I get more information about it. If I want to see associate, like I should be really easy. It should shopping, like it's just starting with like how do you create a brilliant shopping experience. So we're kicking ass at doing it through messaging. Now it's like next thing is like we're gonna do a lot of stuff on the advertising side. Because right now the only ads that really work on the internet are Google text-linked ads and Facebook Instagram ads. Those are the most effective ads. And you run an agency like we have over 1,000 big clients, and not a single one of them has YouTube as a channel in their Google Analytics. Yes, they're not acquiring customers in Google Analytics. I mean, and YouTube. Like they're all 100% of them doing Facebook / Instagram and AdWords, like 100%. So there needs to be places where advertising is really effective, because every brand wants to scale more. They want more place advertising effective. And Facebook's getting cost prohibitive. It's like your Facebook and Google are always going to be a part of your mix, but there needs to be other, there's a big world of the internet out there that's not a walled garden, Facebook, Instagram. And Facebook usage is not going up. So let's put it that way. And Google's out of, Google has 97% market, 95% market share of search, and they can't do any more ads. They're kind of capped on ad density too. So you need other places where advertising actually works. And advertising should be part of content. So we work with publishers too. So advertising is a big part of what we do, but it's ad infrastructure. It's like, how is advertising part of the content? Like in a magazine, ads are part of the content. So how do you make it a publisher? Like, so you go to weather.com or CNN, like CNBC, like how do you reform it, structure there? It feels like part of the experience. You like it. It's like, oh shit, the ads are awesome. Like publishers have what Instagram, Facebook don't have. They're not a publisher. They don't have a reputation line. They don't have a voice. Like you can combine a publisher's voice with the ads. Like it's a publisher have a big advantage over these things, but their CPMs on programmatic CPMs on publisher go for $1 and Facebook goes $50. So Facebook knows how to make effective advertising. So do we. So do we. So we're gonna make advertising a vibe. And also we're gonna bring our technology to stores. They're really cool. It's great, just wonderful shopping experience where you really enjoy going to stores. It's a kind of magical. So and we're
yeah, that's not going humans. Away.
Yeah. We want to enable humans with tech. So we like that.
Excellent. I will disagree on the YouTube side. I think that there is an issue with YouTube where not a lot of people know how to measure the success of it. And if you think about it, any YouTube ad that is skipped is a free impression. And if you think about all the value that you can get as an advertiser right now, it's the best kept secret that we push to all of our clients is you can get a lot of brand essence and messaging across in 5 seconds and not even have to pay for that.
Of course you can get that. But if you want to, listen, if you're like Bonobos, if you're like any brand who's spending a lot of money on Facebook, say they're spending $100,000, $500,000 a month on Facebook, Instagram ads to drive actual new customers, like at a $65 CPA, you're not going to be able to get that on YouTube. You're not. And YouTube,
I think you can because we do it. I'm telling you, hey, give it another shot. Do a deep dive into it. Have somebody really good because they've made a lot of product updates. And again, they're definitely making
some updates. But generally, ads on YouTube, people hate the ads there. People don't like they skip those ads. The pre-roll ads are bad. No one would pay Instagram $10 a month for no ads. Everyone pays people pay YouTube because the ads are a bad part of the experience.
That's fair point.
That's things. The video is a much better format than static. So, but Facebook, Instagram have figured out how to make story ads work. And there are some new formats in Instagram you need the right lookalike, you need to create right lookalikes. That's not in their ethos to make that work. So,
That if most ads on YouTube are hated, then that's actually a great opportunity to make a really useful piece of content that people like, and that'll help you differentiate. Like I see a lot of the same types of ads on Instagram, right? Whether it's apparel or golf stuff or whatever. But to me, a lot of them run together because I see the same ones. There's like a recipe for them. And I don't hate them, but they're all kind of the same. But every once in a while, I see something on YouTube and it's like, oh, that's a good advertisement. And same thing with TV. You recognize every time you see a good TV ad or a good radio ad because it's so rare. But to me, those are the ones that stand out.
Yeah, there can be great radio ads. TV, you're also watching on a 70-inch screen too. So you remember ads there. And you're watching screen size is super important, that stuff. And the YouTube chatter, the YouTube sponsor stuff is getting so bad. That can get so much better. It's just the sponsor itself. So YouTube should be the best place for advertising. Should be the best place. Because everyone's logged in, you should be getting unbelievable advertising that shit. It's just a big opportunity. And more time spent on YouTube than on Facebook, Instagram combined, without a doubt. Now, so products, we have our external products, which is what we talked about. Our internal products, which is more like our corporate operating system, which is like how every single person in the company understands what success is, having high standards, how you have macro value drivers. Part of a great corporate operating system is every single person, including executives and associate, the entry levels, they know what clear success is. So you, part of someone's, you have someone's contributions, that's broken down to two parts. You have someone's kind of core performance, which is your day-to-day job, the things you're responsible for you and your tree is all the under you. And what's a high standard? What does it mean to exceed a high standard? And the second part of that is that core performance is your macro value drivers. So in our case, it's you're either opening new revenue lines, improving great experience, operating velocity, cost savings, compliance, security. So how are you contributing to that both internally and externally? That's part of core performance. The second part of your contribution is your energy index. So that's how you're influencing others, other people's core performance. So how you're influencing others from like their day-to-day things going in a macro perspective. So that's people in your department, other departments. So energy index is how you're influencing others, and your core performance is what you're doing yourself and under your tree. So those are two things that are really important for a corporate operating system. Then when you have that and you really, you know, success, then you want to definitely have, so you get the empowering, the leadership machine. Then you do things like performance acceleration, where you get people out of coaching, out of mentorship. And after you have that, then the people's operating hours when they come in should be less dictated. So it should be a lot like, hey, most companies were either 9 to 5 or 10 to 6, Monday through Friday. That doesn't really make sense, I don't think, once you have a good corporate operating system. And the hours you come in, it's like those are hours you expect people to either be in the office or available for meetings, this. So we changed our operating hours this year. And by the time some people listen next year, we'll have earned the end of it. So I'll tell you that in a minute. So instead of we were 10 to 6 Monday through Friday, instead of that, we took the last 4 hours off Friday and we moved that Monday to Thursday. So it became like more like 10 to 1, 10 to 2, or 10 to 1 Friday. And then Monday, Thursday started 9, so 9 to 6. That means our meetings start at 9. We expect to be available on Slack for meetings at 9. But Friday, they say after 1, your day ends. Now Friday's like 9 to 1. So after 1, there's no internal meetings. Now, if you want to work Friday afternoon, you could. It also, like, but you will choose if you want to, if you have more stuff you want to do or accomplish, then you can do that after 6 p.m. if you want. You can do that before some 7 or 9 a.m. We'll give you a choice when you want to do additional stuff. You should, your core stuff, you should have the time to complete that during those hours. Eventually, we want to get to the point where Friday is an optional day, or Friday is like full optional day, or Monday to Thursday is standard operating days. There won't be any internal meetings when you have an expectation of you being available that day. That would be your day. So that's something we got to earn as a company. There's a lot of big kind of metrics that we need to hit. Part of it's just being like, what percentage of Wunderkinds are referred by the Wunderkinds, and what percentage of our clients are referred by the clients. So that needs to be at least 40% for both. So we're actually very close to that. So it's like, yeah, that's, instead of giving a survey, it's like, how are people feeling when people are referring their best people that they've worked with at other companies or friends? Like, that's a great indicator whether they're enjoying themselves and contributing. So
you say that a key measuring stick of your success as far as what you can do from a corporate operating system is how many employees that you have been referred to by other employees.
Yeah, you look at any employees you're hiring on the basis of what percent referred by others. And I'm assuming like your employees or people are in good standing. It's not like you shouldn't have a lot of that, but yeah. Your best people, as you look at like who are your stars, like who are they referring? Like how are your stars referring to other people? Like that's what you want. Because stars know what the stars do.
So. Wow. So the 4-day mandatory work week with the 1-day optional, I think, is an incredible goal to shoot for. I think it's practical, and I think
we're also going to let people work 1 day remotely when they have that. Right now, it's going to be it's probably going to be Fridays remote and 1 other day for flexible in office. I mean, in office you can really control a lot of energy there, but really flexible if you want to do remote. That's if you might have a higher chance of being an engineer index of 1 if you're in person. There's a lot more you can do in person than remote. For engineers,
we've been remote on Fridays for over a year now, and I think it's been fantastic. Because even before then, people are always leaving at different times on Fridays, and the second things start to like kind of conclude, you're just like mentally checking out. But when I'm at home, it's like, okay, I need to finish the amount of work so that I can actually enjoy my life that's going to happen after the work weekends. So there's actually an intrinsic motivation to be as productive as you need to be to get through that. So I totally agree.
Yep.
Amazing. Yeah,
that's how it should be. I mean, it started with Henry Ford started the Monday through Friday 9 to 5. So if your company's building Model T Fords, then that's a good operating hour.
Amazing. All right, Ryan, this has been an incredible conversation. I really enjoyed it, and I love the perspective. What could our listeners do to keep an eye out for the work that you guys are doing at Wunderkind? What sort of content are you guys putting out, and where should everyone be attuned to watch you guys grow over the next?
Years? The main thing for us is like, hey, we're looking to squat up. So just go to Wunderkind.com and go check out like Arc Career. So recommend, we're looking for people to squat up. We have people in New York, London, Indianapolis, Austin. So that's the main thing I'd ask you to look at. And just our website's gonna have all our content, our LinkedIn. Our website's gonna have a lot of really amazing content. We put out like pretty long form stuff too. So just go to our resources, go there, check it out. But yeah, squat up. Anyone you know, like we're hiring big time.
Fantastic. Brian, it's been a pleasure. Good luck with everything.
Thanks.
And we'll be in touch.
All right.
Thank you everyone for listening. This has been the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. My name is Patrick Gilbert, COO at Adventure Media Group. We'll catch you next time.